Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with David Remmer, Architect Advisor, Development Platform Group, Microsoft. Dave is a leading authority in IT enterprise architecture. Dave, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
It's my pleasure, Stephen. I actually really want to thank you very much for inviting me today. And I'm really looking forward to having a deep conversation around some of the issues that we're experiencing in IT and business today.
Dave, how would you best define yourself in your work?
Well, I actually really quite like my title. In fact, I think my title in many respects is the best way of describing what I do and what my mission statement is. As you mentioned, I'm an architect advisor with Microsoft Canada. And so on one level, I think it's a great title. It's pretty obvious what I do. I give advice to architects. On another level, however, and what I really do enjoy about my job is that that is fairly ambiguous. And so it allows me to work with key technical decision makers, key business decision makers, in really discussing what their issues and strategies are moving forward and helping them to work out where there's good alignment with technology, where perhaps there are other potential avenues for being successful in their organization.
Dave, one of the things I have in my audience is sometimes I get students or people who are sort of early in their careers, and I also have senior managers, executives, and so forth. For the students in my audience or for those who are early in your careers, can you define what architect means?
Well, you know, Stephen, that's actually a great question. That is an ongoing discussion in the industry. And so what an architect is, what an architect does, is sometimes really quite challenging. And what we've done as an industry is we've really created an analogy. We've decided that in the great wide world, the role that kind of best it best describes or is most similar to the kinds of things we do in IT as an architect is, in fact, a building architect. So we've taken the term and we've kind of liberally adjusted it, if you would, for our own uses. But we essentially, as architects, help develop plans and models for the successful delivery of IT projects primarily. But that actually encompasses a lot of activities, and one of the most important ones is really looking at the process of how we build projects, how we build successful solutions. And really one of the primary roles of an architect is to help work out what the best processes are, what the best mix of technologies and solutions would be to help meet a company's strategic goals.
So what would you classify as the different kinds of categories of architect? For example, I heard somebody say that you can be an enterprise architect or a solution architect or an infrastructure architect. What does that mean?
Well, there's again, different classification systems. Typically, and this is actually something that I'd love to discuss this morning with you, that the typical organizations actually do silo, if you would, or actually place architects in areas of specialties. And so traditionally what we've seen is that software developers, people who are actually busy building solutions with software, typically, as they mature in their careers, they eventually get very good at the process of building software, some of the challenges that we experience in our projects, and we often call those solution architects as they kind of evolve in their career path. On the other side of the fence, we've got infrastructure architects who typically have filled the roles of IT managers or IT professionals who help operate the systems and infrastructure that we have in our organizations. And so we find them often turning into infrastructure architects. And then kind of this holy grail, if you would, and I use that term very lightly, of roles is this concept of an enterprise architect. And that role really is a lot less about building software solutions, a lot less about maintaining data centers, and much more about looking at how the enterprise itself is actually architected. How does it operate? What are its strategies? Where does it want to go in the future? And then looking at how you align all the various resources inside an organization to best align with that particular strategic goal.
So let's say I'm now in high school or I'm in the early years of university, and I'm thinking, gee, this IT area kind of looks interesting, and I hear about being an architect. What sort of attributes should I have to be like an enterprise architect or a solutions architect or an infrastructure architect? And I guess there may be some differences too.
There really are. I think that in many respects, there are more similarities than differences. And I say that because the primary goal as an architect is communication. And so really, as you kind of are evolving your skill set, when you're looking at the various capabilities you want to build personally as you grow in your career, the ability to have really strong communication skills, and that, by the way, is not just the ability to speak, the ability to write. It's also the ability to understand human behavior, understand team dynamics, understand organizational dynamics. And so really kind of getting good at understanding how effective communication takes place, how you can be successful in aligning your goals and your team's goals with the overall goals of the organization. And quite frankly, ferreting that out is often very, very challenging. Even figuring out what your organization's overarching strategy or goals are can be a real challenge often. And so really, I would recommend that clearly in the IT industry, you need to have IT skills, you need to understand technology, but to really evolve your career and get into the architecture game, you really do need to start really concentrating on the people dynamics, the ability to communicate and collaborate with your peers, as well as with kind of your fellow organizations. So most of our companies and organizations are split into lines of business and then there are supporting functions. So we often have an awful lot of people in the organization who are not actually performing any IT functions, but use our technology on a daily basis. And really doing a solid job of communicating with them, understanding their needs, becomes one of the central tasks. And so any skill set that you can develop that will help you prepare for that, the better you will be at that particular position.
Dave, I find your background quite interesting. I believe you have a business background in terms of education. So can you profile how you got to your present position in your career?
Yeah, it's interesting. I work with an awful lot of people who started off with technical degrees and then went into the business side of things afterwards, either got their MBA or studied business after their technical degree. And when I was looking at the two different programs and had to choose which way I wanted to go, I realized that a lot of the technical disciplines are very solitary or very prone to being able to self-study, if you would. And the business disciplines, while you can do that to some extent, I found that personally much more challenging. As much as I love accounting, I at least recognize in myself that I would not be able to study accounting without having an examination at the kind of the end of the road. So I really looked at, and all along my goal was to kind of marry information technology with business. And I looked at where it would make most sense for me to actually study at an undergrad level, and I kind of landed on the business side. I also felt fairly strongly, though, that in order to kind of lead technical teams, that you needed, I at least needed to have some technical background. I needed to be able to walk the walk as well. And so I did an awful lot of self-study of technology, computer development, software development, building computers, and just found myself quite naturally very comfortable with working on software projects, building software. And that's really how I kind of started my career, was as a software developer, and found that it became a fairly natural progression to eventually get into an architecture type role.
It's interesting you talk about the architect sort of bridging the gap between the business side perhaps and the IT side and being able to collaborate and communicate and perhaps manage teams and so forth. And so it sounds like your background, like in organizational behavior, which would be one of the courses you take in a business program or maybe some of the communication kind of strategies that you learn in a business program would be very useful as an architect. And perhaps
Absolutely. I mean, I think, in fact, I recall very distinctly in my university career wondering what exactly I was doing taking organizational theory and organizational behavior and really not enjoying them as courses because they didn't seem very practical. They seemed very abstract and not particularly useful. And of course, and what's very interesting I found in the technology business is that that actually was true for the first 5 or 6 years of my career. There really wasn't a huge amount of use for understanding why organizations were built the way they were. And then kind of, I don't know if it's through osmosis or exactly what the process is, but at some point you kind of stick your head up and you realize, wow, these things are actually really, really important to understand. And these dynamics that people are going through, this change process that I'm introducing by developing software, in fact is very similar to what I studied in university. And isn't that interesting? And it really, for me, was a, I don't want to say an epiphany, but it there was a day when I actually woke up and realized, you know, most of those things that my university professors made me study, in fact, have some real use to them.
So what do you hope to achieve professionally, then, in the next 5 years?
Well, I really, really love the role of working with architects and really helping them understand technology trends and quite importantly, business trends. And helping organizations really do a better job of aligning their IT infrastructure, their IT projects and portfolios with their overall strategies. And I think that particular role is an essential one. Certainly Microsoft has recognized that it's a vital component to their strategy of working with organizations to help them achieve their potential. And really, that's one of the things that I'm hoping to do in the next 5 years is help my peers really achieve their potential in their own careers as well as making their organization strategies successful.
So it sounds like with yourself and then also with other architects, some essential components or attributes to their success would be things like having business skills and understanding the industry that they're in, sort of having core industry knowledge, having this sort of focus on the user experience or the customer experience, having interpersonal skills tied in with things like project management or customer relationship management, communication skills, and then also rounded out by technical skills and competencies.
Absolutely. I think that you've hit the nail on the head. In fact, it's, to me, one of the most exciting things about the architect role is that it is, in fact, very, very broad in the skills and capabilities that you need to build. And they aren't very successful in isolation. An elegantly architected solution that in fact doesn't match well with an organization's priorities isn't really worth very much at all at the end of the day. And so being able to really understand the organization's imperatives, but also what's going on in the broader industry, communicate that effectively, understand how projects can be used to achieve success within our organization, and really understand how the processes can be put into motion to best fulfill those strategies is an ongoing learning process, and that's one of the things that really excites me about that role. It's not one of those things where you're ever quote unquote done. You're constantly learning new things. You're constantly finding the priorities changing on you, which is to me also both challenging and therefore exciting. You're never really in a situation where you find yourself doing the same thing you did last year again and again and again. And that's, to me, a very exciting part of being an architect in the IT industry.
You know, Dave, you organized the 2008 Strategic Architecture Forum, and the reason is because you're really an international recognized expert in this area. Can you first overview the forum and its intent and then share some key architecture lessons of high value from the forum?
Sure. We actually hold in Redmond, Washington, we hold a global strategic architect forum at Microsoft every year. And we recognize that a lot of our customers in Canada aren't able to actually attend that particular forum. And we also feel very strongly that the Canadian architecture industry needs to be really supported and to have events such as the Architect Forum really closer to home so that we can invite a larger set of architects to join us. So we actually held in April our fourth annual Strategic Architect Forum in Vancouver, British Columbia. And we really invite as many as we can. It is tax in Canada to one place to really get together and discuss trends in architecture, understand best practices, and what, as often as not, what isn't successful in their peers' organizations, and talk a little bit about technology. We actually do introduce mostly up-and-coming technologies. They're not all Microsoft technologies, although, to be fair, it is a Microsoft-sponsored event, so we do have tend to have a bit of a concentration on Microsoft technologies. But it really does help bring to the top of mind some of the trends and some of the new technology solutions that architects can start to leverage within their projects, within their organizations.
So are there any key architecture lessons that you may want to sort of highlight, or would you prefer maybe a link be provided or something like that?
Well, we actually did record an awful lot of those sessions, so people are able to view a number of the perspectives that some of the industry experts gave us. I would say that probably the number one theme that came out of the conference, in many respects to me was fairly obvious, but I think is a message that really needs to get hammered home, and that is this really overpowering requirement for us in the IT industry to become better aligned with the businesses that we're working in. And really, I would say that overall, the discussions on enterprise architecture, the various technologies, really were trying to get at the heart of how can we better serve our business customers, if you would, in the IT industry, and how can we do that with fewer resources and more agilely, more quickly and constructively with them.
Again, because of your leadership and just your global expertise, can you provide your view of the cloud or SaaS, or software plus services and SOA?
That's really a very topical area of architecture today, and I'm always fascinated by the history of IT, and interestingly enough, if you think back 30 years ago, we really had highly centralized computing models. I mean, a computer was an extremely expensive machine, and so we had a whole army of people whose job it was to program them and to keep them running, but they really were a scarce resource, if you would. They ended up being in large data centers, kind of hidden away in the basement, if you would. And occasionally you'd get reports that would come out of them, and every once in a while you'd actually be able to kind of punch away at a spreadsheet-like tool. But they really were highly centralized. They were what we would consider computing in the cloud, kind of only a little bit retro. And what's really happened over the last 30 years is this kind of, I don't want to say democratization, but the decentralizing of computing power. And we now have, I'm looking at my smartphone right now, and that smartphone has more memory and a faster processor and more storage capacity than many mainframes did that long ago. And so we've really kind of seen this amazing trend towards having a very dispersed set of IT computing resources and storage resources and networking resources. And they're really everywhere when you think about it now. But we've also found that there is some huge value in centralizing processes, centralizing data. And so I think the trend we're starting to see is a really, really interesting one where we no longer have things that are only running in isolation, and yet we are still trying to take advantage of the IT resources that really are distributed. It's actually much more expensive to develop completely centralized resources. So we really are kind of in this pendulum swing where we've gone from one extreme, which was highly centralized, to the other extreme, which was highly decentralized. And I really think we're kind of somewhere in the middle again, where we're trying to balance central resources, central computing power, and central data with the ability to actually take advantage of computing power on the edge. And it's a very exciting time, I think, to be in IT. I think this idea of being able to move technology and move software assets, if you would, around the cloud or inside local data centers or on top of local desktops, we've never really had this level of flexibility in the past. And it really does create some very interesting opportunities for efficiencies, but as well a whole new class of applications that really couldn't have existed in the past. I mean, I look at some of the social networking sites that are very popular, And I just I can't imagine those particular kinds of applications being possible without having the amazing trends we've had towards computing in the cloud and Web 2.0 technologies. And they really do, you know, I think they add a tremendous amount of value from the social perspective anyway. And we're starting to see more and more of our customers become very interested in how you can do collaboration and communication with the same kinds of concepts. We're starting to see enterprise Web 2.0 becoming a very important area of focus moving forward by many of our customers.
So do you see the spectrum then that you have sort of organizations now increasingly moving to SOA, that is service-oriented architecture, exposing more and more web services, combining them in different unique ways, and then this evolving to software plus services where you have these services being offered internally within the organization, but also services being offered online, in essence, sort of this idea of cloud computing or, you know, software as a service?
Absolutely. I think that software has always been a form of service. We just really have highly coupled solutions where we've built everything all together. The user interface has been combined with the business logic. All the data has been local. And I think what's really we're starting to see, much like in the industry as a whole, around 10, 15 years ago, much of our organizations really started a very serious campaign of decentralizing the activities that they were taking on and starting to partner with other organizations to provide services. And I think we, in the last 5 to 10 years in the IT business, have really started to follow that trend. We've got to the place where we realize that actually putting together a best-of-breed solution all ourselves is an extremely wasteful activity. And as well, trying to operate it or maintain it only within our own infrastructure, within our own data centers, also is not really optimized. And so we're starting to see this great tendency to look at best-of-breed solutions, and that best-of-breed may be building block services, they may be high-level services, they may be something in between, and they may run within our own data center, they may run on our own local devices, or they may be entirely hosted by a partner that's actually doing all of that for us. And I think that trend is really around optimizing performance as well as optimizing agility. And I think that's one of the great things that software plus services or software or service-oriented architectures really give us, is this ability to be agile, to build things more quickly than we could have otherwise. And I think that's really one of those currencies that is becoming much, much more prevalent, is this ability to keep up, keep up with the business. The rate of change that many of our organizations are experiencing is phenomenal. And we in the IT industry have had, in the past at least, much more of a luxury of time of being able to say, oh, well, that's interesting. We'll see if we can build a project to meet that need. And when we're done, we'll give you a call. And really, that's no longer possible. We're really getting ourselves to a place where we have to be able to keep up with the amazing rates of change that our business customers are experiencing, and in fact, in many respects, try to get ahead of those rates of change so that we can help lead the change in positive ways.
You know, what do you see as the major interoperability challenges and then their solutions?
Well, I do think that when you start looking at that issue of having software running all over the place, you now have data that isn't highly centralized. And so you do need to be able to have systems communicate well with each other. You need to have a whole different level of processes, security and data retention and conformance issues that come to play. So it is actually a tremendous challenge. I don't think that there are any silver bullets. I think that interoperability is a hard problem to solve, and I think it's going to remain a hard problem to solve throughout the lifetime of our industries. But I do think that there are some tools and techniques that really are starting to help us solve some of those deep problems. And one of that is the idea of having standardized vocabularies and standardized processes. I'm a huge fan of the international standardization bodies. When you start looking at SOA itself, it really isn't possible without a bunch of agreements by a number of vendors who got together and said, okay, this is how we're actually going to format calls on the wire, and this is what the various data types are going to be. And I think that exercise was, you know, obviously made things like SOA possible, but it was also a very low-level technical exercise. And I think what we are starting to see is this evolution of standards. I think that when you start looking at some of the higher-level Windows specifications or web services specifications, I do think that you are starting to see us no longer having to attack the very low-level business or technology problems. We're starting to tackle the really higher-level business or technology problems. Things like, how do we have an entire healthcare message? I've spent a fair amount of time looking at HL7, Health Level 7 type protocols. And really, that's a much higher level of abstraction. We're really getting into some very interesting places where we're starting to look at how do you classify drug tests and how do you talk about administrative type functions. And I think that those kinds of standards activities across a whole variety of industries is going to make interoperability, I think, a much, much easier place to start. But again, I have personal experience that those will never become silver bullets. You will always have a requirement for very smart people to be looking at what are the interoperability challenges and how do we go about solving them.
You know, Dave, you're in a unique position in that you interface with many companies from all different kinds of sectors, and you have access to the latest research in terms of what the trends are and so forth. So from this current work, what deep IT insights can you give that would be of greatest value to the audience?
Well, I think that the fundamental insight that I would like to share is that we really are seeing the information technology world becoming more and more commoditized. And I think that we as IT professionals need to be prepared for that. I think there was a day and age where business problems were, as I say, really solved from a technology perspective, from beginning to end inside our own four walls. And we would look to vendors as partners for parts of our solution, but really we would end up using a bunch of our own resources in order to be successful on our projects. And I see that becoming harder and harder for us moving forward. I think that really we're going to find ourselves much less in the business of building IT solutions and much more in the business of selecting appropriate components and services that make up an overall solution portfolio. And I think that it really does change the nature of the work that we do. We're really not going to be anywhere near as focused on running things through our debuggers and much more focused on understanding interoperability issues, understanding operational issues, and really being able to build value propositions out of a collection of services that we either buy or that we build ourselves. And I think it's really going to fundamentally change the kinds of things that we do as IT professionals.
So it sounds like you're saying that the world is kind of increasingly moving to something like a dynamic computing environment where there's more real-time policy and business rule-based IT allocation.
Absolutely. I think if you start looking at the kinds of requirements that our business customers are coming to us with, they really are much more geared around this idea of a collection of services that have to be managed. Governance, I think, becomes a much more important issue at that point. How do you ensure various service levels to business customers when you're not in control, when it's a highly decentralized suite of services? That becomes a tremendous challenge, and it really does become very policy-based. It requires a whole different generation of tools and the kinds of skills that can best use those tools to be successful.
So what are your recommended IT best practices?
Well, there's actually a huge number of best practices. It really does depend on your role inside your organization and the kinds of solutions, kinds of infrastructure that you're trying to maintain. I have one kind of overarching best practice personally, and that is to remain extremely pragmatic. I think that we and organizations have a tendency to kind of fall down to a place where we're doing things that are cool or things that are exciting and not necessarily really getting to the essence of what it needs to be done. I have, if I was going to kind of borrow the description for it, my best practice is the 80-20 rule. And that is really trying to look at the 20% of the things that we do that create the 80% of the value to our organizations. And if you actually start looking at reducing complexity, really getting to the essence of the problem, and then only solving for that essence as opposed to trying to build a 100% solution, I think we get a lot further a lot faster.
What are then the 5 little-known but essential tips in IT?
Well, I think that they're not necessarily little known, but I do think that if I was going to pull out 5 things that were really essential, they would be, one, that communication is key. I think that most of the projects, most of the real snafus we've seen in the IT industry have become really much, much greatly enhanced because of communication difficulties. I think that concentrating on good collaboration, good communication, at the very least, is almost never harmful to a project or an IT organization. I think, too, that the one challenge we have is that most companies that we work for have actually fairly ambiguous strategies. It's actually really a real challenge often to be able to describe in precise terms what our organization's strategies are. And that, of course, makes it very challenging to be an IT professional when you're really trying to build systems and solutions and infrastructure that support those strategies. If they're not precise, then how do you know you're doing the right things? And I think being able to deal with that ambiguity and help build a little more precision is a real challenge, and one that we, I think, are going to find ourselves involved in more and more moving forward. 3 is that less is more. I think that we have a tendency to become very proud as we build new solutions or add new infrastructure. And I think that the rationalization that's taking place in a lot of our organizations is a very healthy thing. I've read, and I actually totally agree with the philosophy, that every line of code we write and every piece of infrastructure that we put in place is, in fact, a piece of technology debt that we have to look after. And I think that's a tremendous challenge for us as we're trying to keep up with the rates of change inside of our customers' organizations. And so I think that being able to really whittle down to essential problems and reduce the surface space of infrastructure and solutions is really the right way to go moving forward. 4 is that I think that the complexity is, in fact, the greatest challenge we have in IT. As we start to solve more and more problems, I think that we end up building more complex infrastructure, we build more complex solutions, to the point where a human being is, in fact, not even able to maintain it anymore. And we've seen studies that a tremendous amount of our IT budgets are going to maintain solutions. And a large portion of that, I would argue, is because of the huge complexity we've built into those solutions. So I do think that we need to really start to tackle that complexity problem in a big way moving forward. And then 5th and last is really that I think that we're starting to see that agility, in fact, is becoming the key driver for our success in IT. I think the ability to be able to do a lot of little projects that add business value quickly, in fact, is becoming the number one currency for being successful in our organizations.
So again, now speaking from this point of view of being an architect, what do you see as the most important current roadmap level tips involving architecture?
Well, I do think that, as we discussed earlier, that software is really becoming a much more commoditized business, and being able to build integration solutions is becoming much more critical moving forward. I think as a roadmap, the idea of using service-oriented architectures, combining a variety of services as well as technologies that we purchase, and really building a lot more glue around that rather than proprietary systems, really is the roadmap for architectures moving forward. I'm not trying to say that we won't have large legacy systems, but I think they're going to become rarer and rarer. And really, the challenges moving forward are going to be much more about exposing that existing infrastructure and those existing solutions in more flexible ways. Again, really stressing that agility piece, that moving forward, it's not going to be enough to have an inventory management system. It's going to be necessary to be able to have that inventory management system deeply embedded in the various processes in our organization. And I think, again, moving forward, more and more, it's not going to just be business processes within our own organization. There will be more and more requirements for us to have them well integrated into the processes of partner organizations. So I think that understanding how this whole great big mesh, if you would, of services and resources works, and really getting very, very good at understanding how we can put them together for world-class solutions, I think is going to be kind of the most important capability that we have to build as architects in the next few years.
Now, if you were to take that prior question and then sort of think about it into the future, let's say in the next 3 to 5 years, what would you predict?
Well, I would say that we're going to start seeing a maturity in terms of how those kinds of solutions are built. So I think that the idea of patterns and best practices will become much more prevalent in our industry. And I think that's one thing that we probably don't do as good a job as we probably should. I know that when I was in business school and even now as I kind of read business magazines, there is a wonderful capability of building out case studies, of really talking about from a business level what were successful for our peer organizations. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to start seeing more and more of over the next 3 to 5 years is higher level patterns describing how business problems have been solved and then our ability to adapt those patterns for the needs of our own organizations.
I guess one of the things that I'm finding is that sometimes nonprofit organizations or governmental organizations or those in the public sector tend to think when they hear the word business, some IT people say, well, gee, maybe that doesn't apply to me. But really, the concept of some of the business concepts apply to any organizations. At least that's what I'm finding when I'm talking to architects and so forth. And with your background, both on the business side and on the IT side, can you then describe what you think are some of the more important broader issues, like IT or business challenges and solutions in 2008 and beyond?
Well, and I absolutely agree. I would say that most governments and not necessarily for-profit organizations really share many of the same characteristics as quote-unquote businesses, as organizations that have been put together to make a profit. And really from an IT perspective, I think that probably the only thing that's really fundamentally different is that the value creation process is different for a for-profit organization. But almost everything else is almost exactly the same. And I would say that all organizations moving forward, probably their biggest challenge in 2008 and almost undoubtedly in 2009 is going to really be having to do more with less. I think that it's fairly clear that from a broader economic standpoint, we're about to see a slowdown in North America. And even I think globally we're going to see that the next few years are likely to be more challenging than they have in the past in terms of growth. And I think that in our IT organizations, there was a time where we were actually much better insulated from the ups and downs of the economy, that even when a company was shrinking, it was continuing to spend more every year on IT. And I think those kind of wonderful halcyon days are pretty much behind us now. And I think as IT professionals, the one thing we definitely have to be preparing for over the next couple of years is really the ability to continue to do the value creation activities we do, but with less money, less people, and potentially less time.
So I guess then you're seeing solutions to that would be increasing automation and this whole idea of dynamic computing and software as a service or software plus services.
Absolutely. Again, I think that the less technology debt that we need to service, the less of our own lines of code that we're busy pouring through to make changes in business to support business processes, and the more that we can do that that at a high level where we can actually change models or have a service provider make those changes for us, the better control we're going to have over our own resources and our own productivity. And so I do think that, and certainly this idea of being able to build solutions that are much more supported through automation rather than through live individuals and eyeballs, I think is going to be an ever more important trend moving forward.
You know, in this conversation that we've been having now for the past 40 minutes or so, it sounds like you feel the industry is changing, and you can back that up with, just from your insights and interfacing with so many different kinds of organizations. So what advice, then, would you give to IT professionals to stay on top of what is happening in the industry in order to position themselves from a career standpoint and their organization, or organizations, I should say, to benefit from these changes that are occurring, from these trends that are occurring?
Well, I think that probably the foremost thing that I would recommend is that we don't kind of look in the rearview mirror and wish that times were like the olden days. I think one of the very harsh realities of the kind of modern civilization we live in is that change is an ever taking place inside of our culture, inside of our economy, inside of our society. And I think that we really have to become much better at embracing change. And one of the things that I really actually love about the IT industry is I think we, as an industry as a whole, tend to be much better at that. I think that one of the things that's been a reality is that because the IT business is so immature, it has so much more to grow than where it is now. I think we've kind of, in our career path, we've been kind of mandated to change. I mean, very few of us are still building scripts for AS/400. I mean, that's just no longer the prevalent business model. And so I don't know an awful lot of COBOL programmers anymore. So we, as an industry, have been forced to evolve simply because the industry itself is so immature. And I think we really have to make sure that we get on top of that and, in fact, continue to lead change. And I think that's, to me, one of the most interesting things about our industry is that there are an entire class of organizations and businesses today that exist simply because technology itself is one of the fundamental underpinnings to their value creation process. And I think of online virtual stores and virtual meeting places that just simply couldn't exist without our industry. And that, to me, is very exciting. And those kinds of changes, I think we are more and more leading inside of our society and inside our organizations. And I think that we really have to make sure that we continue to do that, that we take a leadership position and really stress that change, in fact, is often value-creating itself.
You know, you speak about change, so let's segue into then your current role. What do you see as your biggest challenges and their solutions, and then how does this relate to business?
Well, certainly in my role as an architect advisor, I think that the change, in fact, is one of my biggest challenges. Really just working with technical and business decision makers in understanding this change, understanding trends, really being able to recognize overall patterns in IT, as well as in business in general, is a tremendous challenge. I find myself spending most of my day really talking about, and often it's from clearly from a Microsoft perspective, what are some of the technologies, products that we're putting in place that we hope will be able to help the value creation within organizations, as well as for individuals themselves. And so I spend an awful lot of time helping people identify those trends and then work out how they're relevant to their own organizations. I do also spend a lot of time working with architects trying to understand the complexity in their systems and look for strategies and avenues to reduce that complexity. How can we replace systems? What systems are, in fact, essential? Which systems are perhaps less essential? What can we outsource? What do we feel is really one of our huge value creation propositions that we wouldn't want to have someone else do for us? And identifying where the family jewels, if you would, the important pieces of your IT infrastructure is in fact a huge challenge that we go through on a daily basis in our industry. Helping individuals and teams build maintainable systems, as we were talking earlier, really concentrating on this idea of a solution that's not build it, compile it, ship it out to the ops guys, and then forget about it, but really making it so that it's highly maintainable, highly automated, I think is a huge challenge that I work with organizations all the time with trying to come up with solutions. And then I think kind of the biggest, if I was going to say the biggest challenge that I face over the next few years and that I'm working on constantly is working with architects for us to really kind of up our game in order to become much more equals with the rest of the organization that we work in. I think that we have traditionally really seen ourselves as a very kind of service model as opposed to really business leaders. And I think that's one of the things when you start looking at just how integrated our companies are becoming, just how vital information is becoming to the success of organizational strategy. I think that we as IT professionals really need to start stepping up to the plate and becoming full partners with the business in helping develop strategy and helping to organize our structures inside of our companies and organizations to be successful along those strategies.
You know, in your travels, you come across some really interesting situations, probably some that are surprising or unexpected, amazing, perhaps even funny. Can you share some of your stories from your work?
Well, I've worked with a lot of organizations over the years. I've had some wonderful experiences. There have been some fantastic failures in the past as well. I think that the one story that I would say that really kind of, I think, dovetails nicely into this idea of change is I've actually worked for companies both big and small. I've had my own organization that I co-founded with some others. And what I find actually kind of really interesting is when I look back over a fairly lengthy career, I know lots of peers who've had longer ones, but I would say just under 20 years is a decent chunk of time. I actually look at the number of organizations that I have worked for in some form or fashion and marvel at how few of them, in fact, are still around. And I hope that isn't entirely because of my association with them. I hope that there were other factors at play for that. But really, it's tremendous in my mind to look at just the incredible number of organizations that have either merged or have sold themselves or, in fact, are just no longer around. And it is a testament to just how amazingly quickly this particular business of ours changes. And I kind of look back with humor at kind of the vast pile of organizations that I've worked for that are no longer traded publicly, if you would, or have a public brand associated with them, but have, in fact, turned into some other kind of entity.
You know, David, you're talking about seeing this sort of incredible history you have of 20-plus years and seeing organizations morph or be bought out or get into mergers or evolving in some way. Sort of based on that kind of insight that you have, can you provide your predictions of future business and IT trends and their possible implications and opportunities?
Sure. Well, I think, probably the first trend that's I think an obvious one, but is important to identify and to work around, is this idea that the projects that we work on are going to have completed much, much more quickly than they have been in the past. I think that the idea of, and there's lots of methodologies, agile methodologies are often referred to in the solution building phases of projects, but I think that we're really going to find this idea of mega projects really becoming much less sustainable. I think most of our organizations need to kind of get the low-hanging fruit of the value creation through IT quickly. And so I do think kind of the first trend we're really going to see is a lot fewer mega projects, and even the projects that I wouldn't call mega projects themselves are going to be structured to be a variety of quick, agile projects as opposed to long-running ones with milestones, if you would. So I think it's a tremendous opportunity because we will find ourselves much more entwined in the cycles of the business. And I think that's one thing that we really are finding. It has been a huge challenge is going away and building something for 12 months. It's kind of fun from an IT perspective. What we've really found is at the end of those 12 months, a huge variety of requirements that we had taken for granted in our solution have changed, just because the business itself has changed, or the environment has changed, or individuals who are actually going to use the solution have changed. And so I think that we have a tremendous opportunity now to really become much more embedded in the changes in the business by having our IT processes adapt much more quickly, become much more agile to them. I think another major trend is that this idea of communication and coordination will be the norm. I think we're going to see that tools around collaboration will be very tightly woven into pretty much everything we do in IT. And I think that's a great thing. I think that it is a tremendous opportunity. We've got lots and lots of very clever people in our industry. But individual work is becoming less prevalent. We're really starting to see the kinds of problems that we need to solve only being solvable by teams, by groups of people, as opposed to individuals by themselves. And I think that you do get better decisions, you do get better products, and you do get better processes when you have a variety of perspectives and a bunch of really smart people thinking through solutions. But in order to do that effectively, you really do need tool support. You need to have the kinds of infrastructures that make communication and collaboration convenient and easy and value-creating as opposed to kind of value-destroying. I think another major trend, and this is going to be very specific to IT, but I think that enterprise architecture will see more and more of this as well, is that we're going to start using models, I think, an awful lot more than we have in the past. I think if you took a look at the average IT solution or infrastructure base, there was often a Visio diagram that kind of we would draw to show the relationships between systems. But that's, in many cases, that's as far as it went. And I think that we're going to start seeing, a major trend towards the models themselves being, quote-unquote, executable. We're really going to start building solutions from a modeling perspective, and then filling out the little kind of fiddly bits, the detailed pieces in code. But the code itself will become, I think, much more secondary moving forward. And the same thing in going to be true, I think, from the solutions perspective of building solutions through models. I think we're also going to find that our infrastructure will be much more model-driven. We're really going to understand the systems we have, our inventories will be made up of models, and we're going to actually operate infrastructure on the basis of that model, really understand what the health model, for instance, of our IT infrastructure is supposed to be, and then have tools that help us monitor that, and automation in order to correct problems. And I think that we're going to really start seeing that this idea of the enterprise itself as being model-based. And so we can start taking a look at, what would it mean if we introduced these new processes? What would it mean if this particular line of business was sold off? And really kind of get to a point where we can understand the dynamics of our organizations much, much more richly through a modeling system, I feel. And I guess possibly the last trend I think that's going to be really important for us as IT professionals is that, much as we were talking earlier, I think computing is going to become increasingly important to be an integrated platform as opposed to a proprietary platform. And I think we're going to start seeing more and more of our business processes taking place in the computing infrastructure of our partners and an awful lot less taking place inside our own four walls. So I think we as professionals need to really start to get our heads around this idea of, and I think we're in many respects farther ahead than some of our peers in other parts of our organizations. But we really do need to, I think, really get our heads around this idea that that the overall process is going to be kind of a cross-organizational process moving forward, as opposed to today, which is mostly proprietary processes. And even getting, you know, the kinds of intelligence we need around what's taking place in the process, how do we optimize those processes, is going to become a real challenge when we have cross-organizational issues that we're going to have to take into account.
Something that would be of value to the audience then is, what kinds of resources do you look at? Like, which ones would you recommend and why?
Well, I think, you know, almost everybody does research on the web. I think that obviously the billions and billions of web pages are often a rich place to get information. What I do find, though, is, you know, that the one thing that the web lacks is really solid editing. And I think that, you know, again, that's both its strength and its weakness. I think that the good part of that is that because of a lack of editing, you get a lot more raw information. You get information more quickly. I do think, however, that there is, you know, often the concern that some of the information you're getting may be biased. It may, in fact, be incorrect. It may, in fact, be obsolete. So I actually do find myself spending an awful lot of time looking at some more traditional sources of information. And probably the one that I am kind of most fond of, that I pretty much find my most indispensable resource, is The Economist. The Economist magazine, which is a weekly magazine published really on global economic and political issues. And I find that, you know, again, from an architect's perspective, the tools and IT technologies are extremely important, but they all exist in a much larger context. And when your country's at war, or when your economy is about to enter a recession, information about that, quite honestly, most of the time trumps how you build a solid service-oriented architecture. So I find that just keeping track of global trends in terms of politics, in terms of business, in terms of economics, is invaluable in terms of understanding what may in fact become a very strong environmental impact on Microsoft's customers and architects inside of organizations. I also am a huge fan of the Harvard Business Review and the Sloan Management Review, which are, the Harvard Business Review comes out as a monthly publication, and the Sloan Management Review is a quarterly publication. And both of those are really very, very good from a business perspective for understanding trends in management, trends in organizational theory and behavior, trends in finance. And they really, if you're looking for a very strong grounding in the forward thinking in terms of business and organizational theory, those are really invaluable resources. And then I guess the last place that I would kind of recommend is, I do have a penchant for books. I really, really quite love, in fact, probably overindulge in my love of books. And there are some fantastic, both technology books, but as well less technology focused. In fact, the one that I'll call out right now is a book called Enterprise Architecture as Strategy, Creating a Foundation for Business Execution. And it was written by Ross Wheel and Robertson. It's actually available from the Harvard Business School Press. And that's one of many kind of business technology books that I read that I find absolutely indispensable in helping me shape my thinking and really looking at what value creation exercises would be most useful at a number of my customers' organizations.
We've touched on so many different topic areas. Now here's an opportunity for you to kind of make your comments. And in this way, if you were to ask the questions, what would they be, and then what would be your answers?
Well, I think these questions have been, you know, they've been excellent. I think really, you know, probably the only other question that I would have added into the list is really talking about what kinds of problems have I been seeing at a number of our customers' organizations, and how have those organizations solved them. I think, you know, again, going back to my comment earlier, I think we as an industry need to really, and this conversation I think is kind of a, you know, absolutely in the right direction of really talking about case studies and looking at what are others doing that they are finding successful, what are they doing that quite often, what are they doing that isn't successful. I think rightly or wrongly, we as a species have this tendency to learn better from mistakes than we learn from victories, if you would. And so I think that's really more discussion, and that's one of the things, back to one of your earlier questions, one of the real goals of putting together forums and face-to-face opportunities for professionals to meet is really so that we get this opportunity to have a dialogue and talk about what's worked for us in the past, what's been less successful. And I think that, that you know, every opportunity we as an industry get to have those kinds of conversations, the richer we'll be for it.
So extending upon that question and then that sort of answer, can you provide some ideas or areas or where you see problems and you know what's causing them in your travels?
Certainly. I think that the number one thing that we have found in our IT organizations over the last, say, 10 to 20 years is this creation of what I called earlier technology debt. All of this amazing infrastructure and amazing software that we're running to solve problems, but now having to spend an enormous amount of time maintaining and kind of just keeping alive. And I do think that that's probably the number one thing that I spend my time talking with customers about is how do they rationalize, how do they simplify in order to be able to execute what they're executing today with fewer resources, make changes more quickly, and really how do they kind of move from a highly complex view of technology to a simplified kind of strategic view of their assets and their infrastructure.
Well, Dave, you know, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today, and we will continue to follow your significant contributions both in this country and globally because of your, you know, the tremendous background you have, and you are a recognized authority in this area. So we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with us.
Stephen, thank you very much for your time. It's been a real pleasure.